بسم الله إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد Our topic that we start off with today is, if you like, the final piece of the puzzle. Not the puzzle, marriage is a puzzle, but the final piece of the picture of marriage, and that is the mahr, or it, we call it in Arabic also the sadaq, which is what the man gives to the woman. Okay. Now, before we start off, we have to point out that the scholars have agreed that every marriage must have a mahr to it. Every marriage must have a mahr to it. Okay. So whether the bride or the groom, they specify it or not, it is understood there is a mahr. And it is not allowed for the groom to state that there will not be a mahr in the marriage. Because this is something that Allah has made obligatory in the Qur'an. Okay? Allah says in the Qur'an, Surah Nisa, verse 4, وَآتُ النِّسَاءَ صَدُقَاتِهِنَّ نِحْلَ. And give women their صدقات or their mahr of their free will. Okay? The men must give it freely to them. There can be no conditions laid down, there can be no harsh hardships or, you know, emotional blackmail. All of this is prohibited. The scholars have agreed that every marriage must have a mahr with it. Okay? So the parties cannot agree beforehand that there is no mahr for this marriage. Even if the woman agrees before the marriage. No, the bride or the groom has to offer the mahr. Okay? And then we're going to come to what if she later on says you don't have to give it to me. That's a different story. But the groom has to offer a mahr at the time of the marriage. Okay? Now, it is sunnah to state the mahr at the time of marriage, but it is not a condition, it is not a rukun or a shart that you state it. It is sunnah to state it, because if you state it, then this will leave you with no problems. If the groom says that I'm going to give the bride a mahr of, let's say, $10,000, okay? Then there is no difficulty later on if there is any dispute or disagreement. It is well known what the amount of the mahr is. But it is not a requirement. It is not a requirement. This is because of the fact that the Prophet allowed women to get married without mahr. And the proof for this is that there is a sahabiya by the name of Barwa bint Washiq, that she got married during the lifetime of the Prophet and she did not specify, or her husband did not specify a mahr at the time of the marriage. Okay, so they lived a life, I mean they were married, but the husband did not specify a mahr, and this occurred at the Prophet's lifetime. When the husband died, now she has to be given a mahr, but no mahr was specified. Okay, so the Prophet, they went up to the Prophet ﷺ to decide the dispute, you know, between the two parties. Okay, how much mahr should she be given? Now the Prophet ﷺ did not get angry, nor did he rectify or correct that you should have had a mahr. He allowed it, and he gave her the mahr of women in her similar social status. Whatever a woman in a similar social status and a similar background would have been given according to the custom or culture, the Prophet gave her that amount of mahr. But he didn't say you should have had a mahr at the beginning of the marriage. So this shows you that it is allowed to have a marriage contract where you don't verbally specify the amount of the mahr. And if this was to take place, that you have the marriage contract and there is no mahr specified, what does this imply? What is the mahr going to be? According to the social status and social custom of that time. In other words, that particular girl, what is her background? What is her family status? What is her lineage? And what are the girls in her particular culture and custom given as mahr if they meet all of those similar characteristics and criteria? That will be her mahr. Okay? So we say that it is allowed then to have the marriage contract without specifying the mahr. But is it allowed to have the marriage contract without the mahr? No. Whether you specify it or not, there is a mahr understood in the marriage contract. Okay? This is because Allah has clearly commanded so in the Quran. Tayyib. Now we get to the differences of opinion. Now this is so far pretty much agreed upon. Now we get to the differences of opinion. Firstly, the minimum amount of mahr, and secondly, the maximum amount of mahr. Okay? Now we don't want to go into great detail, but all of the four madhabs have different opinions about the minimum amount of mahr. Some of them say 10 dirhams, some of them say 3 dirhams, but the correct opinion is that anything of value can be given as mahr. No minimum. Anything that has value to it can be valid mahr. So it doesn't matter whether it's money or jewelry or property, anything that has material value to it, this can be mahr. So even a person can give as mahr his services, physical service, physical labor. For example, the woman that he's going to marry has a garden. He can tell her, as your mahr, I will physically take care of this garden, manual labor in this garden for a year or two, or whatever. So he will specify the mahr, and that mahr doesn't have to be money. but anything that is of value. And this is the correct opinion. Okay, and there are a number of hadith to support this. Other than the hadith in Sahih Bukhari and Muslim, that the Prophet ﷺ told the man that wanted to marry a certain woman, he said, find a mahar for her. So he could not find anything. He said, I only have two garments. He said, find even if it's an iron ring. An iron ring is a worthless object. Almost worthless. It's not worthless. It has a very pitiful value. Okay, a few pennies maybe in our times. But he said, find even if it's an iron ring. But the man could not even find an iron ring. Okay? So this shows that had he found an iron ring, which is almost worthless, not totally worthless, but almost worthless, had he found an iron ring, that would have been his mahar. But since he did not find an iron ring, then the Prophet ﷺ said, do you know anything of the Qur'an? He said, yes. So the Prophet ﷺ said, I marry you, right, because of what you have in the Qur'an. I.e. you will teach her the Qur'an, and that will be your mahar. Okay? You will teach her the Qur'an, and that will be your mahar. So now, just as it is allowed, according to the correct opinion, to pay someone to teach you the Qur'an, okay, because it is a value. You can't pay someone to teach you the Quran. You cannot pay someone to recite the Quran. But you can pay someone to teach you the recitation of the Quran. Okay? So therefore the man, as a mahar for his wife, would teach her those certain surahs that he had memorized. Okay? Now is this something that has money to attach to it? No, but it is something of value. Manual services. And the Prophet himself instructed and commanded the man to get married because of that. So this shows you that the correct opinion is that there is no minimum amount for the mahar. There is no minimum amount for the mahar, whatever the two parties agree upon. And there is a hadith in Sunan al-Tirmidhi in which a man was going to give a pair of shoes to the woman. Okay, so the Prophet ﷺ asked her, are you content and satisfied that he marries you on a pair of shoes? And she said yes. Now this hadith has a slight weakness to it. Okay, but the concept is still valid, that you can give anything. You can give anything as mahar that is of value. Now this is the first scenario. The second thing we have to talk about is the maximum amount. And this, according to the vast majority of ulama, there is almost ijma', if not ijma', that there is no maximum amount to the mahar. Okay? Getting high tech, are we? There is no maximum amount to the mahar. Okay? You can give as much as you want. And this is based on the verse. Which verse is this based on? Everyone knows? Or most people know? Hafizah, what is this verse? If you give one of them a qintar, okay? If you give one of them a whole treasure, qintar means like a treasure chest or a huge amount of gold. If you were to give one of them even a qintar, then don't take it back from them. Okay? So the fact that Allah has said in this mahr is talking about the mahr, he said, even if you give a qintar, a huge amount of treasure, a huge amount of gold, don't take it back from them. This shows you that there is no maximum amount for the mahr also. The minimum amount is anything of value. And the maximum amount, there is no maximum amount. Whatever the two parties agree upon, this is the maximum amount of mahar. However, it is strongly encouraged that the mahar be a small amount. Something that is easy for the woman, or the man, excuse me, not the woman, the man. Because the Prophet ﷺ said in an authentic hadith, in a Hassan hadith, that the best are the marriages that have the most barakah, the most blessings, are the ones that have the least mahar. Or he didn't say least, he said the easiest mahar. Aysaruha, the easiest mahar. Okay? And this is a very sad fact that in our times the mahar has become something that is, in certain, especially in Middle Eastern countries, something that is not even affordable for the average man. Okay? 50, 100, 150,000. This is ridiculous. And it is not, to be frank, it is not really meant to be given to the woman. It's just a matter of showing off. Because no man can afford this amount. Especially in the Middle East, no man can afford this amount. It is just as a matter of showing off, my mahar was 150,000 riyals. No bachelor is 25 years old, 30 years old can afford this amount immediately. So it's not really meant, it's just as a boasting thing, and this is without any doubt a very evil custom, a very evil tradition that has started, that would make the mahar so high. Because the Prophet said the best marriages, the marriages that have the most barakah, are the ones that have the least or the easiest mahar. Tayyib, so far so clear. Now, the mahr, like we said, has to be given by the man to the woman. It has to be given by the man to the woman. The woman, however, has the option of refusing the mahr. The woman has the option of refusing the mahr. It is not up to the man to force her or even to try to force her. Emotional blackmail, any type of blackmail, or put hardships on her. But if the woman does so freely, then in this case the man doesn't have to give the mahr. Only if the woman does so freely. This is clearly stated in the Quran. In which verse is it stated? What is the verse in Arabic? Again, who knows? The beginning verse of Surah An-Nisa. What are they? I can't remember the Arabic. فَإِنْ طُبْنَ لَكُمْ عَنْ شَيْءٍ مِّنْهُ نَفْسًا فَكُلُوا هَنِئًا مَّرِئًا فَإِنْ طُبْنَ لَكُمْ عَنْ شَيْءٍ مِّنْهُ. That if the woman, they give back to you the mahr, a part of it or all of it, doesn't matter. Suppose the mahr was 10,000, the wife says to her husband, it's all right, you only have to give me 5,000. Okay? The Quran says, as long as the woman does so freely, the Quran specifically mentions freely, she wants to do so, there are no hardships put upon her, then it is allowed for the man to take the mahr back. So the woman has the right of taking, refusing to accept any mahr or making it a portion of her mahr. You can take back a third of your mahr, or half of your mahr, or two thirds of your mahr, or 90%, whatever. It is up to the woman. But with the condition that there are no hardships or pressures put on her, from her guardian or from their husband, from any factors. She has to do so freely. And inshallah there is a reward for her in doing so, because the Prophet said that this is the best type of marriage, when it is the easiest. Okay, طيب, now we get to the second section, and that is, when is the mahr due? When is the mahr due? We talked about the mahr, the concept. Now, when is the mahr due? Okay, we start off now. The man and the wife get married. Okay, so the nikah is now valid and in place and in effect. If the man has intercourse with her, or the wife and or the husband, they die. There are three scenarios. Firstly, the man has that intercourse with her, or the wife dies before the intercourse. Obviously, after the intercourse, then obviously the condition has been met. Or the husband dies. In any of these three scenarios, then the full amount of mahr must be given. In any of these three scenarios, the full amount of mahr must be given. Okay. Now you might ask, the woman dies, who's going to take the mahr? She's dead. What is the answer to this? Her inheritors, exactly. You will still give it to her and then distribute it amongst her inheritors. Okay? So in any of these three situations, the ulama have said, all of them, that the mahr will be in its full entirety due upon the woman from the husband. Now the difference of opinion arises, what if he did something other than intercourse? Okay? So he was alone with her, or he kissed her, or caressed her, or anything more than this. And there was a big ikhtilaf here. To make a long story short, as we usually do, the correct opinion, inshaAllah, is that if the man is alone with the woman, and there is or there was an opportunity for them to have intercourse, then it is irrelevant whether they had it or not, the full amount of mahr is going to be due to the woman. Okay? So there is, the nikah has been done, and the man was alone with the woman, in a place and in a certain amount of time, where intercourse was possible, then we don't have to go and ask what occurred in that meeting, or private, in that private meeting. But suppose they were alone in a place where intercourse were not possible. Suppose their parents left them alone in the room for a few minutes, and then they came back. Then this would not qualify as the full mahr. Only when they are alone and there is a possibility that they could have been intimate. As long as the possibility is there, then we don't have to ask. We don't have to, you know, question. We take this at face value, okay, and the full amount of mahr is due from the husband to the wife. So then we talked about four scenarios. The first two are pretty much agreed upon, and the last one is where there's ikhtilaf, and we said that the strongest opinion, inshallah, is that whether intercourse occurred or not, as long as the husband was alone with the woman, and it was possible for them to have intercourse, then the woman gets the full amount of mahr. Okay? There are certain situations or scenarios where the woman gets nothing of the mahr. So we talked about where she gets the full mahr. Now we go to the other extreme, where she gets nothing of the mahr. And this is when, this is when the marriage is annulled because of a problem with the woman. So before the husband enters it, because obviously when the husband enters it, anything happens after that, then she has the mahr. Okay? But the marriage contract has been done. And then the woman, for example, it is discovered that, like we said, we talked about last week, one of the reasons